Hey everybody, Seth here, just busting at the top of this episode because in between the time that I recorded this episode and it's being released, the finalists were announced for the 2024 Hugos, and I have the honor of being on that list for Best Fancast. So thank you so much to everybody who nominated the podcast. Really, really appreciate it. In case you haven't checked yet, I'm on the finalist lists along with the Cood Street Podcast, Octothorpe, Publishing Rodeo, Science Fiction Fans Booma, and World Building for Masochists. So it's an absolute thrill to be named among those podcasts. I'm hoping to meet some of the other co-nominees at Glasgow Worldcon, and that should be a lot of fun. But again, thank you so much. And of course, if you think this podcast merits a vote in the Hugos and you're a voter, I'd appreciate to have that. I'm going to be there in person. I'm going to be super nervous now that I'm on the finalist lists, but it's going to be really, really exciting to be there and see the winners announced in person, even if it's not me. And, you know, it's fine if it isn't. That being said, I'm going to turn you over to myself and my sister in the past. Hi there, and welcome back to Hugo's There 2.0, and I'm doing another subgenre of speculative fiction deep dive with my sister Katie. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Seth.
Katie has previously joined me for our Comfort Reads episode about Discworld, which was fun. And today we're going to be talking about urban fantasy. Anybody who listens to this podcast knows that fantasy is not generally my most favored genre. But when I look back over my actual reading from, you know, when I did read alouds and that kind of stuff, almost everything I read to my son growing up was urban fantasy of some kind. And we'll get to that, kind of talking about the definition of the genre. But is this a genre that you've read a lot of for a long time?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, quite a bit. It is one of my favorite genres. I love urban fantasy slash paranormal romance. And we'll talk about the difference between the two of those.
I think they can be conflated, definitely.
They can be, but there is a really specific definition of paranormal romance. It's kind of a subset of urban fantasy.
Okay.
Paranormal romance, cozy mysteries. I love cozy mysteries, and of course, trashy sci-fi romances.
Okay. And I don't remember, we probably talked about it on the Moist von Lipwig episode, that you worked as a bookseller at Barnes & Noble for quite a long time.
Yep.
I remember seeing the genre label crop up, you know, paranormal teen romance.
Yes.
There was a whole section of that that just sort of sprung up fully formed in, not really fully formed. It just got labeled that way. And I feel like pieces of urban fantasy and even horror and other places got shuffled into that category because it was hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's talk definitions then. What is urban fantasy?
Urban fantasy generally is fantasy that is set in a modern context, and it is not always urban. Ilona Andrews, one of my favorite authors, whom we're going to be talking about a lot, has also talked about rustic fantasy. And you'll see this in a few different series, that it is fantasy modern day, but it is set out in the boonies somewhere.
Right.
Currently, Faith Hunter has a series called Soulwood, which is set in the deep boonies. It's an absolutely terrific series. And Ilona Andrews has The Edge, which is all set in, which is in a rustic setting as well. But urban fantasy generally is defined as taking place in the modern age, and it is set in a place that is kind of recognizably Earth.
Okay.
Even if maybe it's an alternate Earth.
Then something like Discworld is definitely set on another world, right?
Yes.
So you wouldn't characterize that as, and it's not really modern either, right?
Yeah.
It tends to be steampunky.
It's you know, sort of medieval through steampunk.
Okay.
And even something like Chronicles of Narnia, they were contemporary for their time, but the fantasy element was really set in a different world.
Right.
And so I wouldn't call Chronicles of Narnia urban fantasy. And even something like Harry Potter is more hidden world fantasy. Okay. It is modern world, recognizably Earth, but it's set mostly in the wizarding world. But it does occasionally overflow into the more mundane world.
Right. It's almost like portal fantasy, but the portal is just the hidden world.
Yeah, exactly. And so Harry Potter kind of straddles the genre line. Mm-hmm. Chronicles of Narnia is definitely fantasy because it is set in a medieval stasis fantasy world. Mm-hmm. And the only connection is some kids from, you know, the time.
The contemporary world.
C.S. Yeah. Lewis was writing, basically.
Right. But something like, and we'll get into some kind of recommended readings, but something like the Percy Jackson series is more closer to
that urban is urban fantasy. Okay. That's definitely urban fantasy.
Okay. I mean, it's also kind of hidden world. In a way.
Yeah. But a lot of urban fantasy, it has something like in Percy Jackson, they have the mist, which is a concept they brought over from Greek mythology because Rick Riordan was or possibly still is.
I will tell you it's Riordan for some reason.
Okay. Anyway, whatever his name is, he taught mythology.
Yeah.
And so he brought over the concept of the mist from Greek mythology, which is, it hides the doings of the gods from ordinary mortals.
Right.
There are some people who can see through it. Rachel Elizabeth Dare in the Percy Jackson series, for example.
She's the one who becomes the oracle.
She's the one who becomes the oracle, but she's a clear-sighted mortal. She can see through the mist. Sally Jackson can see through it.
Right.
And so there are some mortals who can see through it, but for the grand majority, when something weird happens, like a titan stomps through New York, to them it's just a really bad storm.
Okay. So when we've been exchanging texts and things on this, I asked if Odd Thomas was urban fantasy, and you said, yes, definitely. And my comment was, it seems like it, you know, it verges on horror. Mm-hmm. And you sent back a comment to me. I don't know if you remember what it was, but...
I think that I sent what I sent back to you was that horror and urban fantasy cross-pollinate a lot.
Yeah.
So horror as a genre, of course, it's a long-standing genre. Probably the first recognizable horror story was Frankenstein.
Sure. We claim that for science fiction as well.
It's also claimed for science fiction. Yeah, a lot of genres kind of cross-pollinate. Mm-hmm. But, you know, horror, you've got witches, you got werewolves, you got vampires, you've got, you know, these creatures of the night, and they are out to kill you, eat you, make you one of them, whatever. Yeah. Urban fantasy, they also have witches, werewolves, vampires, and they're like, but what if not necessarily evil?
Right.
And then paranormal romance says, it has witches, werewolves, and vampires, and says, but what if sexy? Yeah.
That's interesting because I just, for Take Me to Your Reader, I just watched the 70s version of Dracula that we saw as kids with Frank Langella.
Oh, yes.
And that's definitely...
He could get it in the 70s.
I really enjoyed that movie, actually, on a rewatch. I'm like, okay, I remember why it was so creepy, but also it's like the choice to take that character and say, but what if sexy? That's kind of... And they I think there was a subtitle for some on some of the movie posters, you know, Dracula, a romance or a love story.
Yeah, so horror and urban fantasy have a lot in common, and I would class Odd Thomas as being very much a genre straddling book.
Sure.
You know, because it's got the horror elements and it's got a fantasy element. You know, the creatures in that book are not classic horror creatures.
Right.
Odd Thomas is someone who can see beyond the normal.
Right.
And that's something very classic for urban fantasy or for fantasy in general, as well as...
Yeah. And then just, you know, seeing ghosts is very common in urban fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. It's a bit like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer is... You know, I watched the entire series, of course, I would classify it as also straddling the line between horror and urban fantasy. Okay. Not all of the monsters they came across were evil. They also brought in some creatures and concepts from fantasy rather than, you know, strictly horror. And so, again, I think that's a series that kind of straddles the line. And sometimes, you know, the line isn't really very clear to see, you know, between what is horror, what's urban fantasy, what's straight urban fantasy, and what's paranormal romance.
Right.
You know.
Where, sidebar here, would you say that superhero movies are urban fantasy?
They're kind of their own thing, in a way. Superhero movies, they could be considered that. A lot of them also dip into sci-fi.
Yeah.
I mean, Thor is from Asgard, you know, a different planet. Superman right. is from Krypton, another right. planet. Mm-hmm. And then you have characters like Batman or Tony Stark or Spider-Man, who they get their powers through science and, right. you know.
And then you have characters like Swamp Thing and John Constantine and.
Yeah.
What is it? Dark Man. I can't remember his name. I can almost remember his secret identity. Mm-hmm. Dead Man. That's who I was thinking of. It's another one of those. Alliterative names, like yeah. comics love to do. But okay, yeah, that's interesting. Because I was reading a book a while back that was recommended to me by a coworker called Soon I Will Be Invincible. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely set in the superhero kind of world, but it feels more like urban fantasy to me.
Yeah. And you know, it's an interesting conversation. And I know mm-hmm. that on some urban fantasy forums, they've, you know, discussed where this line is drawn. And right. the point is that sometimes you can't say exactly what side something is on.
Yeah. I think if you try and split hairs too far, then you're like, well, everything is urban fantasy.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah. but some of the better known examples of urban fantasy, Neil Gaiman writes a lot of stuff that could be considered urban fantasy.
Okay. So American Gods.
Like American Gods, for instance. The TV series Highlander was, I think, definitely urban fantasy.
Yeah. It kind of treads on Hidden World as well.
Yep. And I'm looking currently up at your at genuine fake Duncan MacLeod replica katana.
Yes.
On the wall. Yes. My brother's a big old dork, by the way. Yeah. Don't let him fool you. So that's, you know, that was very much urban fantasy. Mm-hmm.
We just ignore that Highlander 2 said that they were from another planet.
that movie doesn't exist. What are you even talking about?
I know.
Right. So, yeah, urban fantasy, generally, it goes one of two ways. Number one, it is hidden world. There is, alongside our normal world, there is a hidden world that some people are part of. And importantly, these people are also part of the normal world.
Right.
So Highlander is one of those. Mm-hmm. Very few people know about the immortals. Mm-hmm. And there are some who do know about them. The immortals, they exist in the modern world, but they have their own thing going on. And the other way it goes is what I call open world. These are not official labels. So if anybody wants to pick nits with them, fine, whatever. You're not the one recording this, and I am.
People can chime in with how they would label things.
Exactly. Yeah. So open world is everybody knows about it.
Okay. So True Blood.
Yeah. True Blood would be a good example of that. So anyway, I recommended several series to you.
Yeah.
Several books and series, and some of them are hidden world, some of them are open world, and some of them are like the Mercy Thompson series by Patricia Briggs. Mm-hmm. It was hidden world, and now it is becoming open world. Okay. At the beginning of the series, the Fae have just come out of the shadows. Mm. And during the first book, werewolves reveal themselves to be real.
Okay.
And as things start to go on, we start to get a little bit more openness in that world.
Okay.
Faith Hunter Skinwalker, series is open world. The vampires were kind of forced to come out of the closet when Marilyn Monroe attempted to turn JFK in the Oval Office. These things happen.
Yes.
And as the series goes on, more creatures like shifters start coming out of the woodwork.
Okay.
And shifter, by the way, is a blanket word for a person who shifts into an animal. It can be a real world animal. It can be a fantasy animal. So
okay,
that's what a shifter is.
Okay. So like another series that you had recommended, or at least a book written and read.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the author.
Anne Bishop.
Anne Bishop. And that one is open world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's alternate history in a way, because sort of in place of what we would consider indigenous peoples, they have what they call the Terra Indigene, mm-hmm. which are just like the original inhabitants of Earth mm-hmm. that are non-human.
Yeah. And so when Homo sapiens rose, they went out into the world and discovered the others
right.
who are already there. And over the millennia have reached kind of a balance with each other.
Right.
And the Terra Indigene, they are, they're predators.
Okay.
One and all.
Yes.
So they are shifters, always predatory animals.
Crows, owls.
Crows,
wolves,
yes, sharks.
Mm. Interesting.
Yes, there is the shark guard.
Mm-hmm.
They also are vampires, or the sanguinati,
right.
And they're elementals, and you find out there is a group called the Elders, whom you really do not want to meet, and who come out whenever humans start to harm the others. The Elders step in.
Okay.
And so it's a world that's kind of held in this balance. It's kind of a polarizing series in many ways. The lead character, Meg, she's what's called a blood prophet. If you cut her skin, she can tell you something about the future.
And she has that drive to cut herself.
Yeah, and she has this drive to cut herself. Anyway, she, because of what she is, she's been cloistered away until she finally managed to escape. She is this very innocent character. And that's not really typical of the genre. Mm. It's much more common to have first-person snark monsters. Anyway, we were talking about sort of giants of the field.
Yeah, so I want to make it official that we're talking about sort of, if you've never consciously read urban fantasy, where might you want to start?
Yeah. One of the biggest names in urban fantasy, and the one who I think really made a breakthrough, is Jim Butcher.
Yes.
He wrote the Dresden Files. And so the Dresden Files, it's urban fantasy. Harry Dresden is the only wizard in Chicago's White Pages. Mm. It is still a hidden world fantasy, urban fantasy for now.
But people who know.
But people who know.
It's like The Equalizer, but yeah. with magic.
Exactly. And anyway, it also draws heavily from fiction noir.
Okay.
And that's kind of created a little bit of a noir cast on the people who were influenced by Jim Butcher. Mm. And I'm not going to say that they're copying him, because I've read a lot of them and they are definitely their own thing. But he's definitely an influence
yeah.
on the genre as a whole. So Jim Butcher is kind of the big name when mm-hmm. you're talking about urban fantasy book style. And some others, we've talked about Patricia Briggs a little bit. She also writes straight fantasy, but she writes urban fantasy as well. Her Mercy Thompson series and its spinoff, Alpha and Omega, are very popular. And they fall among werewolf communities,
sure.
mostly.
And so Mercy Thompson is a shifter who shifts into a coyote.
Yes. She is kind of her own thing, and you find out as the series goes on why she is her own thing.
Okay.
And
So this is what you gave me some recommendations, and I looked up, my library had the graphic novel version of Mercy Thompson, and they they go as far as you can go in a respectable graphic novel with the what about sexy part, because of course shifters, when they shift, not all of them, but some of them, you know, end up nude or start off nude. And so they exploit that to the extent that they can.
And the book does, the series does have a romantic element to it, but it isn't, the romance is not the driving force of the book. And so it's considered urban fantasy rather than paranormal romance.
Yeah. So that's where you would draw the line. If the romance is the key, is the main factor, then it's paranormal romance.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was Janine Frost, another paranormal romance, urban fantasy author, who kind of defined it as being that way. If the romance is the driving force behind the book, if you could not separate out the plot from the romance, then it's paranormal romance.
Okay.
If you can, if you could throw out the romance and still have a story, then it's just straight urban fantasy.
Okay.
And her good friend, Ilona Andrews, has echoed that. So another big name is Seanan McGuire, who writes several series. Mm-hmm. I recommended to you Sparrow Hill Road,
which I did. I found the audiobook for that one. That was quite good.
Yes.
Now it's more or less a collection of stories. Did it begin life as that? Or?
It actually began life as a spin-off of her Encrypted series.
Okay.
Seanan McGuire writes two main series and several sub-series and some experimental books that are quite fun. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's another one, the Wayward Children series.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's one of her more well-known ones right now, just because it keeps getting nominated for Hugo Awards.
Yeah, yeah. Her main series are the October Day series. I read the first book in that and didn't really jive with it. Her Encrypted series, which I love, number one, it's hilarious. And number two, it's got some great characters in it. Ghost Roads, it spins off from Encrypted. You run into some of the same characters. Mm. But Ghost Roads, she uses the urban legend of the phantom prom date.
Right.
That you hear from everybody, you know, that somebody was driving home and spotted a girl by the side of the road wearing a dress and hitchhiking. They invite her into their car, and very often she'll ask for a jacket.
Right.
Or something, because she's cold. And so the driver gives her his jacket, drives her to a place, lets her off, and then later on finds out that this was the exact description of some girl who died, goes and finds their jacket slung across her gravestone or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so she takes this and she gives life to that phantom prom date, Rose. Mm. Who is a road ghost.
Right. And she is kind of a snark monster.
She is kind of a snark monster. Again, Dresden Files definitely influenced the first person snark monsters.
Okay.
And I love them, mind you. But I also like discovering urban fantasies that have different kinds of characters, like Meg from Written in Red. In that she's this very innocent character who frankly does not know snark when it's snarking right in her face.
Right.
Where
with Rose, she died as a fairly innocent 16-year-old, but now is a kind of a world-weary ghost.
Exactly.
Who has done lots of things. She's done all the things. Because as a road ghost, right, she hooks up with people and gets rides from them. And, you know, part of the lore in this one is if she borrows a jacket if someone lends her jacket, she has physicality while she's wearing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I love that series because it it does use that urban legend, and because the world that has been created for these road ghosts is so interesting.
Yeah. And one thing I'll say is that I've noticed kind of while investigating the titles that you gave me is urban fantasy authors really like to give you catalogs of character types.
Oh, yeah.
And so in this one, you get all kinds of, well, there's road ghosts, and then there's hitchers, right, mm-hmm. which are a specific kind of road ghosts. And I can't remember what some of the other ones are called. Route witches, right? Mm-hmm. They're not dead, right, the route witches.
No. The route witches, they know the road ghosts. They understand the ghost roads. Mm-hmm.
And so Sparrow Hill Road, the story is that this character is sort of has been pursued by the person who killed her, mm-hmm. who has made a devil's bargain kind of thing, mm-hmm. to live forever as long as he can harvest.
Yeah, as long as he can harvest life force, souls, essentially. And yeah, souls. That which he feeds to his demon car.
Right.
So, and that is, I think, a 3-book series.
Okay.
Though Rose turns up in a couple of the encrypted books as well.
Okay. I really enjoyed Sparrow Hill Road. I thought it was good. I mean, I like Shauna McGuire. I haven't read a ton of her stuff, but she had an absolutely fantastic story in an anthology called Robot Uprisings, with a great title, We're All Misfit Toys in the Aftermath of the Velveteen War.
Nice. Yeah, I really enjoy her writing. Like I said, I couldn't quite get into October Day, but I have enjoyed several of her other books. And the reason I recommended Sparrow Hill Road to you is because that's my favorite series of hers that I've read.
Yeah.
Just because it is so unusual. It has such great world building, you know. So anyway, Faith Hunter is another big name in the genre. I didn't recommend any of hers to you this time around. But she's got her Skinwalker Jane Yellow Rock series. And then she's got a spinoff of that called Soulwood that is rustic fantasy set in rural Louisiana.
Mm. The Mercy Thompson, is it Mercy Thompson?
Mm-hmm.
Is set in Tri-Cities, Washington.
Exactly.
So not far from us.
Yeah, I, yeah. Well, so that's...
It's ours, but...
Yeah. That's one of the things Megan, our sister Meg, she actually got me hooked on Mercy Thompson and Kate Daniels, which is Ilona Andrews.
Okay.
And they are another of the big names. And the reason I say they, by the way, is because Ilona Andrews is actually a husband and wife writing team.
Okay.
Ilona and Andrew Gordon.
Mm.
Yeah. So they've got an interesting story of their own. She is Russian and came over to the U.S. for school. And Andrew Gordon, often just referred to as Gordon, is former Army. And so anyway, they if you read their bio, they specifically deny that he was ever an agent with a license to kill, and she was the Russian spy sent to seduce him. That wasn't the way it went.
Okay.
Actually, she just outscored him in English class, even though she was Russian.
Oh, very nice.
He's never quite forgiven that. So anyway, so they are currently just one of my favorite authors.
Okay.
And I guess that I will refer to Ilona Andrews in the singular, even though they are a husband and wife couple. So pronoun they, but I'm going to refer to them as singular otherwise.
Yeah.
Just go with it. I'm an English teacher. I can do these types of things. So anyway, they have a couple of series. One of their big anchor series that kind of brought them into the whole world of urban fantasy, got them noticed, is the Kate Daniels series. And it's an open world urban fantasy set after a magical apocalypse in Atlanta. And what happened in this world is that humans, it turns out the world has cycles of magic and technology. And long ago, it was magic, but magic got pushed too far, so magic fell and technology rose.
Mm.
Well, again, we pushed technology too far, magic started rising again. Mm. So now the world gets waves of magic and tech. And so this is set some years after what they call the shift. And when that happened, all of a sudden mythological creatures coming out of the woodwork, technology failed, buildings crumbled because magic does not like iron and steel buildings. And so whole cities crumbled. They estimate that a third of humanity died just in during the first shift. And some people also became monsters. Some became shifters, and then when people died, some of them were infected with what's called the Immortuous pathogen, which turned them into ravening vampires. And they've got a very original take on vampires as well. Vampires are actually completely mindless, and they can be steered by necromancers.
Interesting.
So these necromancers, who like to call themselves the people because they're incredibly pretentious, they can take control of these vampires and use them as kind of beasts of burden. But Kate Daniels is a woman of a highly magical bloodline. And so this is set in post-apocalyptic Atlanta. She has a sword, and anyway, she takes care of people's problems. So it's a great series. The first book is really the first book that ever blew up, and so, you know, it's one of those that, with a lot of series, the first book will be a little bit on the rough side, but you'll be able to see the promise of the series, so you keep reading. So that was theirs. It is fantastic. It is a full series. It is complete, 10 books and some novellas, and the first main story is complete, and now there's actually a couple of Kate Daniels spinoffs. And so that's one of their main anchor series. They also have their rustic fantasy series called The Edge, which is set in rural Louisiana. For some reason, urban fantasy writers like Louisiana. it is set between what is called the Weird, which is a full-on fantasy world, and the Broken, which is our world. So full-on fantasy world, the Weird, it runs on magic. Our world, no magic. The Edge sits between them. So magic is possible. It isn't as strong as it is in the Weird. And so anyway, the Edge is four books. They are interconnected paranormal romances. And it's very explicit. These are all relationship books. There's a guy and a girl, and they fall in love. There is also the Hidden Legacy series, which is open world. During the 1800s, during a flu pandemic, the Osiris serum was discovered. And anyway, one third of people who took it died, one third turned into monsters, and one third got magical powers. And so these have run in family lines. And so it is alternate history from mid-1800s. Before then, everything was the same. After that, things start splitting off. And the way that the main character of the first three books, Nevada, is discussing it with her cousin Leon. And she says, well, you know, if the Osiris serum hadn't been discovered, then, for instance, we would have still had the world wars. But, you know, maybe instead of Alexei the First of the Russian Imperium attacking Poland, it might have been Germany instead. So you can see where some of the differences fall between their history and ours. Mexico in their world is a world power. The First Nations have gained enough power that they have their own territories in the Canada and the U.S. and are basically another of the North American nations. pretty much. And so anyway, really interesting series. They are paranormal romances in that the relationships in the first, it's basically two trilogies right now. One for Nevada, one for her younger sister, Catalina. In each one, there is a romance between the sister and her lover boy. And those are very important. You can't separate them out. And so they're considered paranormal romances. And then the third of their anchor series is called Innkeeper.
Right.
And it is one of those that straddles the line between fantasy and sci-fi.
This was what's the first book called?
It's called Clean Sweep.
Clean Sweep, right. And so I checked that one out from the library. Found I think you said it was called Graphic Audio, where it's it's like it's kind of like a full cast production of the audiobook. Not quite to radio play levels.
Yeah.
But really well done. And so you know, you have different actors voicing different characters and interacting with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
It was interesting because here werewolves and vampires are aliens.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it, you know, it does straddle that line between sci-fi and fantasy, but Dina, the lead character, invokes Clark's Law at one point.
Right.
When she is asked by another character how this staff she has works. She says, magic.
Right.
Okay. It's way beyond anything we can understand here on Earth. I just know how to use it. And so
most of the time it looks like a broom, but
but it doesn't have to look like a broom. It can look like a spear. It can shoot things. It can do a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And her inn is actually a living creature. It was grown from a seed, and it now can send roots and branches to different places. Like, for instance, at one point she opens a portal to a place called Bahachar, which is this interplanetary bazaar. And anyway.
And the house has to be kept, right?
Yes.
Or it will fade.
Yes, yes. The inns need an innkeeper and they need residents. They need people staying there.
Right. And so in that first book, she has a long-running tenant that's a very old vampire.
Well, no.
Is she?
Caldinia is not a vampire. She's actually from a different world altogether. She was a planetary dictator who got deposed.
That's right. That's right.
And is now hiding from people who want her head in a very literal way.
Yes.
Caldinia is...
She reads kind of like a vampire because she's sort of old and wise and... obviously evil.
Well, more not predatory evil. Than evil,
yeah.
Yes. Like when she informs Dina that that she had to find something that one of her people had hidden on his body, and so she boiled him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's she's a fun character. She serves as kind of both a mentor and a foil to Dina in many ways because Dina has a lot of scruples and Caldinia has absolutely none.
Yeah.
And also, as long as she can get her Funyuns in mellow yellow, she's just fine.
Mm-hmm.
The series introduces a bunch of fun characters. We meet Sean, the werewolf, who doesn't really understand what he is at first.
But he's hot.
But he's hot, yes. And then Arland, the vampire, who they're not real vampires. They've just got fangs.
Yeah. And teleporters. They have transporters, essentially.
And transporters, yes. Yeah. And he's also hot. He's part of her. He is a recurring character. Then in, I think, the next book, she gets another resident of the house, the chef, a large hedgehog-like creature called Oro, who is absolutely delightful and very dramatic.
Mm.
And so she starts kind of collecting these people around her. You also at one point meet her sister Maud, who actually gets her own book later in the series. And two characters, well, actually more than two characters, a couple of characters from The Edge end up crossing over.
Okay.
Because The Edge, turns out that's sort of a pocket universe of its own. Mm. And so they can cross over into Innkeeper. And anyway, it's a lot of fun. But kind of the hook of the series is she's trying to figure out what happened to her parents.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
She reminds me a little bit of Harry Dresden in that she's very competent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you do not really want to mess with her. She's a good fighter as well.
Yeah, and within the grounds of her inn, she is a great power. Like at that one point, Sean starts getting aggressive with her and she tells him, "Your welcome is withdrawn." And the inn just spits him right out.
Yeah.
And he can't get back in.
Right.
So yeah, as an innkeeper, she has certain powers. The farther away from her inn she gets, the more they fade. At one point, she is forced to use her power off of inn grounds and very nearly breaks her own brain in the process. But her inn starts, you know, it develops as things go on. Anyway, it's a great series. It's very funny in a lot of ways. But that series also has a couple of the most heartbreaking scenes I have ever read in books. And so, anyway, it's a lot of fun. Yeah, Ilona Andrews, I discovered them after Megan recommended I read Kate Daniels. And I just really enjoy their characters and their world building.
Okay.
Because that, to me, is one of the most important parts of any genre fiction is show me what the world is like. Make me see it. Make me feel it.
Right.
You know, and the gold standard for this, in my opinion, is probably Neil Gaiman.
Yeah.
He draws you into these fantastic hidden worlds and worlds that aren't so hidden, and it's stunning.
Mm. I've had mixed results with Neil Gaiman. American Gods did a good job of drawing me in particular mm-hmm. in some parts of it. The Graveyard book did a really nice job of mm-hmm. of kind of establishing that world as well. But I read Anansi Boys, and most of the time I was going, I'm not totally sure what I'm supposed to picture mm-hmm. here. Like the way he was describing things didn't evoke it in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I struggle sometimes with that.
And he's an author that if you love him, you absolutely love him. And he's one of my favorites, possibly my favorite author. But the reason that I love the Ilona Andrews books is because though that world building is so good and it's so complete and it gets more and more complex as things go on. So if you continued to read the Innkeeper Chronicles, for example, they keep adding to this world. And so before you know it, you're completely involved in this world where you have erudite chickens, dramatic hedgehog chefs, and really mean trees. And so, you get into this and it's sort of like, no matter how ridiculous something might be, it somehow works. And you know, that's one of the reasons I read urban fantasy is for these situations that might seem completely ridiculous, but somehow they work. Yeah. Like for instance, polka-powered zombie T-Rex.
Of course.
In the Dresden Files.
Right.
Yeah.
We have not talked about the sparkly vampire in the room. Uh-huh. Like Twilight definitely fits into the sort of
paranormal hidden, romance.
Yeah, it's more important. I mean, but you've kind of discussed paranormal romance is almost a little subgenre of urban fantasy.
It is. Paranormal romance is, I think, a subgenre of urban fantasy and horror and science fiction as well, because science fiction, you know, it's also paranormal,
right?
And so yeah, it's sort of its own subgenre.
Did Twilight kind of kick that off, or at least kick off that craze where I said that the
it definitely took advantage of it. There was there was teen paranormal romance before Twilight, but
it was huge. So
yeah, it made it. Yeah, Twilight was huge and
kind of mainstreamed it.
And of course, after that success, a bunch of other authors started writing in it. And I think that that all also kind of got a kick from Harry Potter. As the Harry Potter audience grew up, they started, you know, getting hormones and looking into paranormal romance.
Yeah. Well, it's very common, I think, to have at least some kind of romance angle in a lot of urban fantasy, but it's common in all kinds of fantasy as well.
So it's common in all kinds of fantasy, you know, like, for instance, one of our favorite books, To Say Nothing of the Dog, it's got a romance element in it. Yeah. It is not a romance genre book,
right?
But it does have a romance in it. By the way, I recently read Connie Willis's latest book.
The Road to Roswell?
The Road to Roswell.
I've read a couple of chapters, but I haven't gotten back to it.
It's delightful.
Good.
Yeah. It's also got a romance in it, but it is not a romance.
Right.
And so, yeah, you do get those romance threads in books. But unless the plot really revolves around the romance, you know, getting the two leads together, it's not a romance.
Right.
Kate Daniels, over the course of the books, Kate Daniels meets, gets involved with, and eventually marries and has a child with Curran, the leader of the Shifters in Atlanta. However, you could take that romance out of the books and you would still have a cracking plot start to finish.
Okay.
With Hidden Legacy, on the other hand, if you tried to remove the romance from the books, there's still a really good plot in it. It's just that there wouldn't be as much book.
Right. You're left with the B plot.
yeah. It would it would remove a lot of important elements of the story.
Is it? I noticed. You know, you did mention Jim Butcher and Neil Gaiman. At the risk of sounding not sexist, but just, you know, oversimplifying. Is urban fantasy a genre that's more, not dominated, but is it more common for there to be female authors?
It's an interesting question because there are quite a few male authors in the genre. Brandon Sanderson writes some. Simon Green, I think, writes a few. I might have his name wrong, though. Kevin Hearn is a fairly big name. He writes the Iron Druid books, which are quite popular. Of course, Jim Butcher and Shane Silver. But there are also, but I can think off the top of my head of way more female authors.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and, you know, Ilona Andrews sounds like a female name.
Yeah.
And that may be marketing, you know, just because it's possible just smart marketing. There's a lot of readers of urban fantasy might be female and looking for female authors. But I don't know. It was just something that stuck out to me and that the recommendations that it gave me.
Yeah. I mean, right off the top of my head, I can, you know, we've got not just Ilona Andrews, we've got Faith Hunter, Patricia Briggs, we got Nalini Singh, Janine Frost, Shannon McGuire, Anne Bishop. Yeah. Whole bunch of female authors in there. But there are, again, quite a few male authors. So not really sure if I would call it female-dominated. Anything romance tends to be female-dominated. There are very few out male romance authors.
Right.
By which I mean I have no idea how many may be operating under female pen names.
That happens in DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Yeah. But basically most romance authors are female because, quite frankly, the audience tends to be female and female readers don't often trust male writers with romance.
Right. Or writing women.
Yes.
If you look at science fiction as a genre.
Breasted boobily down the stairs, yes.
I love that example.
Yeah. Jim Butcher gets more than his share of flack for some of his descriptions of female characters in the books. He gets better as things go on, but yeah, it's like,
Well, there's a whole, I mean, if you just look up men writing women, mm-hmm. you will find some just hilarious quotes.
Absolutely so. Hilarious quotes, yeah. Yes. So paranormal romance, definitely female dominated. Urban fantasy, I think there's a fairly nice split.
Okay.
But a lot of the really well-known authors are female.
Okay. So if you had to, you know, for somebody who wanted to, we didn't really do like beginners, urban fantasy, and advanced. We mm-hmm. kind of just worked through the recommendations that you gave me. And, mm-hmm. and full disclosure, Katie and I have just been talking off the cuff, right? Neither of us is reading from notes or anything. So this is just, enduring the doggies walking through panting and begging for scratches.
And licking my feet.
Yes. But if you wanted to just say, hey, you know, the easy button for starting with urban fantasy, would you start with something like American Gods?
Well, maybe.
It's a complex book.
Yeah, so. If they already like Neil Gaiman, then I would say, go ahead, read a bunch of Neil Gaiman. Yeah. So some of his books, Neverwhere is an interesting example because it takes place, it's urban fantasy, hidden world. Once you're part of it, you become unnoticeable to the world above. Mm. Ocean at the End of the Lane is urban fantasy. Coraline, the Graveyard Book, American Gods, they're all basically urban fantasy.
Okay.
All the way up to even Good Omens.
Yeah, yeah.
It's genre bending.
Right. Good Omens is more, and instead of taking vampires and werewolves, it takes like spiritual archetype, angels and demons. And,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But it's got some elements of urban fantasy in it, and, mm-hmm. you know.
And it's very funny.
Very funny. Mm-hmm. My goodness. But, you know, Dresden Files is a great place to start. That's where I started on the genre. I would say that there's a Facebook page called Fans of Urban Fantasy, and its banner is Harry Dresden. It has the lead character from Iron Druid, and for the life of me, I cannot come up with his name right now. I've read the first 5 books in that series, and I can't remember the guy's name. Anyway, it's got Meg from Written in Red. It's got Kate Daniels and Mercy Thompson. And that's the banner, because those have been 5 series that have kind of blown up. And they're all very different from each other in many ways. You know, Harry Dresden borrows from noir. It's hidden world. Iron Druid borrows a lot from Irish, Celtic, and generally
British Isles
mythology.
Hmm. Atticus O'Sullivan, by the way.
Atticus O'Sullivan. Yeah. Okay, right. Written in Red is open world, and it is alternate Earth. And so it is really different from the others. And like I said, it is a little bit polarizing.
Yeah.
It moves a little bit slower.
I bounced off it.
Yeah, yeah, so. Yeah. And that's not uncommon. But the people who love it really super love it. Mm. Our sister Meg rereads it every year. Mm. And I love it as well. Kate Daniels, open world, future, post-apocalyptic. And in this world, people have done a lot of rebuilding already. And so when you get kicked into the story, you find magic shifts. Okay, so television starts working, it stops working, your lights go off, but your fey lanterns come on. And the ice sprite in your freezer wakes up. And you have to chant up some enchanted water for your enchanted water car engine. They're super noisy. And a lot of people ride horses around because, you know, horses always work whether magic is up or tech is up.
Sure.
And swords always work whether magic or tech is up. Guns start to fail when magic is up, so
oh, yeah.
Kate does not like them.
I remember you telling me about that aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah. She's got a friend who's a sharpshooter, but Kate is definitely not. She says she could hit the broadside of a barn with a bullet as long as she threw the bullet. Mm. So yeah, people have rebuilt in a lot of ways as it's some years after the initial magical apocalypse. And so that's really interesting to find the ways that things have changed, ways things have stayed the same, how people have adjusted to this new world. You know, at one point you have these sort of stupid redneck brothers chanting up an enchanted water engine, and it's just completely unexpected because these guys have already shown themselves to be absolute numbskulls. And here they are doing magic.
I think enchanted water is moonshine, isn't it?
Possibly. I don't know. I haven't tried it. Then, you know, Mercy Thompson is a world that was hidden and is now becoming an open world, which I think is a really interesting process to watch.
Yeah.
So urban fantasy covers a lot of ground and, you know, to me, the most important things are the world building, but along with that, of course, the characters. You have to like the characters, you know, and that's that. To take another author who's probably been discussed on this a lot, Orson Scott Card, his world building is fabulous. Mm-hmm. His characters, he falls down on characters. Mm. And so, to me, having those great characters really brings it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to see a world in which anything can happen, but it's got rules.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And that's part of the fun of it, too. And that's why I think the authors are like, you know, this is a shade and this is a dust witch, you know, and mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of going through those catalogs because it's explaining how the world works.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 And that is another thing that it has to be internally consistent. You know, the characters can grow in power, but, you know, just, you know, pulling powers out of wherever when we've known that character is not able to do that before, you know, you've got to earn that.
Yeah.
You know, same way as, you know, you introduce a, you know, if you're writing a series of books, you introduce a rookie FBI character, well, that person has to grow and change so that they get new skills and new authority.
Yeah.
In the same way, Harry Dresden, for instance, when he's introduced, he's a wizard and he's got a lot of power. And he knows a lot, but as the series goes on, he really refines what he is able to do. Mm. Same with Kate Daniels. You meet her, she's an amazing sword fighter and she has magic. But as the series goes on, she is able to find people to show her how she can use her magic better. Because that part of her was kind of repressed for excellent reasons. And, you know, same with any other genre. You've got, you know, Percy Jackson books.
Yeah.
You know, they grow, the characters in them grow in power over the course of the series so that they're able to do things and understand more of what they can do.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I think that's a good place to leave it. I think. So I will ask my listeners, if you're a fan of urban fantasy, what are your favorite titles? What are your favorite characters? Anything, you know, throw them at me, because it's a genre that I, like I said, I've read a suspicious amount of for something that I don't consider myself a fan of. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't mind something sneaking past my no fantasy guards. And if it's something that I really enjoy, and I did enjoy the Innkeeper, Clean Sweep. And the Shauna McGuire title as well.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, there are some authors in the genre who've gotten very well known for excellent reasons.
Yeah.
You know, and I keep discovering new authors in the genre who have started to really kind of put themselves out there.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Cool. All right. You don't have any real online presence of any kind other than you're on Facebook.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm considering becoming an influencer, but, you know.
You should become a booktuber or like book talk, right?
Book talk. Maybe I will.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
If you do, I will promote your stuff. So, all right. Well, thank you, Katie, for the primer on urban fantasy and kind of what it is and some suggested titles and things to think about if you want to investigate that genre.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on.
Okay. Bye now. Bye, everybody.
The theme music for the Who Goes There podcast was composed and performed by Tim Kuske.